We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
I think one of the really beautiful things about being a direct-to-consumer digital-first business is that we're able to do a ton of consumer education in a way that's not possible on shelf.
Welcome to Retail Gets Real, where we talk with retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. With its entry onto Target store shelves in the spring, a whole new group of consumers has been introduced to Grove Collaborative this year. On today's program, we're talking with Grove Collaborative co-founder and CEO, Stu Landesberg, about the evolution of the natural products company. From starting as a direct-to-consumer retailer, to developing new products, to teaming up with one of the biggest retailers in the country, we'll hear from Stu about the efforts to grow the company and help consumers live a more sustainable and planet-friendly lifestyle. But first, I'm going to welcome, for the first time, my friend, my colleague, and my co-host, Scott Case. Hello, Scott.
Hello, Bill. I am so thrilled to be here and to be with Stu on my very first co-hosting gig.
I know. Well, as the National Retail Federation's Vice President of Corporate Social Responsibility and Sustainability, I couldn't think of anybody better to have on this program than Scott. Welcome.
Thank you, Bill.
And Stu, welcome to Retail Gets Real.
It's great to be here. Glad to be with you, Bill and Scott. Welcome. Glad I could be your maiden voyage.
There's a lot of things that went through my mind when you said that, and I'm just not going to say it because your mom's listening, Scott's mom's listening, my mom every once in a while pops in. So I want to start, Stu, by asking you to kind of familiarize us with Grove Collaborative, how it started, where the business is now, and a little bit about Stu as well. I mean, how did you get into this and how long has that been going on?
Sure. So Grove's vision is that consumer products can be a positive force for human and environmental health. And if you look out at the consumer products category, and we're primarily in home and personal care, this is a category that has a mixed track record on human health and an atrocious track record on environmental health. $1 trillion a year in our category alone sold in single-use plastic. And that's just one of the sort of environmental crises that our industry contributes to. And so Grove's vision is that we can transform the category from being one that's detrimental to human and environmental health to one that is not just less bad, but more good. And we do that by creating product lines that are differentiated from what existed in the past, by having more sustainable formats that are more efficacious for the consumers to over-deliver on quality and over-deliver on sustainability. And that sometimes means changing how we do things, right? Moving from shampoo that's diluted to shampoo bars, for example, or moving from, you know, a glass cleaner that's 90%+ water to adding your own water at home to a concentrated glass cleaner. But Grove has, across our 10-year history, I think has done a really excellent job of building trust with consumers by creating and curating brands that stand for the intersection of sustainability, consumer-first thinking and efficacy, so you really don't have to compromise to make an extraordinarily good choice for your family and for the planet. And so, Bill, that's what we do. I'll sort of go now into how we got here. And, you know, the story for Grove, I think, as for many entrepreneurs, starts long before the first day of incorporation. You know, I grew up in a family that prioritized sustainability in a way that I didn't realize was unusual, but in retrospect was. I think I was probably in high school before I realized that paper towels came in any color other than brown. And my mom, this is a true story that your listeners will probably appreciate. When I was like 11 years old, there was an English paper, a social studies paper that I had to write about what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I wrote that I wanted to be the CEO of the largest company in the world. The largest company in the world, as identified by 11-year-old Stu, seventh generation, which, you know, I think we all know now, sadly, not the largest company in the world. But probably as an 11-year-old, the company that I had the most products from that brand in my house. So anyway, I have long cared about this category and long cared about sustainability. And when I started my professional career, I was fortunate to work at a big private equity firm called TBG Capital covering consumer retail and internet and saw firsthand, especially in the grocery channel, the divergence between consumers who wanted conscientious product and what's on shelf, which is largely still legacy brands that don't meet the highest standards of human and environmental health. And so we saw an opportunity in building a direct consumer business model, which connects consumers more easily to products that I think align with the best versions of ourselves. And so the 10-year journey that we've been on since starting Grove, has had many phases. The first sort of 4 or 5 years were an extraordinarily depressing disaster where we couldn't get traction. And the last 4 or 5 years have been incredibly exciting as we've grown the business from 15 employees to almost 2,000. And that can certainly get into the big parts there. But the thing that's really powered our rise has been our ability to consistently build and develop high trust brands for consumers that over-deliver on sustainability and also over-deliver on customer experience, both in design and efficacy.
And one of the things that I was thinking about was when you're trying to get people to think about being more sustainable, there are people that have been using certain products for a number of years, certain ways. It's part of it psychological, which is to get them to understand that this product is as good, it's just different. So, for example, bar shampoo. I mean, people would be like, that's called soap. You don't put that in, that's not your hair. So how do you address that, Stu?
Yeah, it's interesting. I have a lot of respect for the big consumer packaged goods companies who I think created habits across categories that are so ingrained into our brains that we almost take them as doctrine. Shampoo is a great example because shampoo is just a bunch of actives mixed with water. And so when you're using the sort of traditional shampoo that comes in a plastic bottle, you're just using a more dilute version of a shampoo bar, right? It's basically a shampoo bar. You take it in a bottle, mix it with water, and boom, that's your shampoo, right? And then you get some other chemicals in there to make it like lather up and make it more gelatinous, more viscous. Those aren't necessarily things you want in your hair on your body, but you can get all of the actives and take the water out. And so I think one of the really beautiful things about being a direct-to-consumer digital-first business is that we're able to do a ton of consumer education in a way that's not possible on shelf. I think maybe our seedling tree-free paper line is the best example of this. Tree-free paper, it's really important. The household paper industry is responsible for a tragic amount of deforestation across North America. The percentage of old growth redwoods that remain is in the teens now. And a lot of that is because of the commercial paper industry. We use bamboo, which grows something like 10 times as quickly as conventional paper, sequesters something like 10 times as much carbon. So you end up sequestering significantly more carbon, significantly better environmental footprint than the softwood that's traditionally used in household paper. But it's a complicated story. We've been extraordinarily successful building that brand and telling that story online because we've been able to educate consumers about the benefits of tree-free paper. And I think the most compelling piece of content we've put out on that has been viewed by something like 50, 60 million American households, right? Extraordinarily high household penetration because digital makes that possible. And so we're able to really create demand in a powerful way for new product categories. And then when we take something to a retail partner like Target, the demand that we're building online, we don't monetize all of that, of course, online, right? We all know we see an ad online. You don't necessarily buy that product that moment. Maybe you're not out of it. Maybe you're too busy. But by participating in the Target ecosystem, we have the opportunity to serve that consumer who sees our message, understands why shampoo bar, tree-free paper, concentrated hard surface cleaners that are zero plastic, why those things are important. And we're able to serve that consumer, even if he or she or they isn't ready to transact the moment they see our ad online. So it really expands sort of the number of consumers that we're able to reach. But you're exactly right that the core of this is about how do we create a business model that allows us to be successful in not just changing how consumers buy product, but fundamentally changing the products that consumers buy to a way that better aligns with what they want, right? With what the consumer wants.
Right. All right, Scott, it's all you.
This is exactly the conversation this fanboy was hoping to have. Why don't we start with your pure play, direct-to-consumer sustainability brand? What did you learn there? And what were the biggest lessons around consumer behavior that you've relearned being part of the Target ecosystem?
It's a great question. So there's two questions there, right? Biggest learnings and biggest things we've relearned. I think the biggest learning for me is that sustainability is not niche, right? I think in this country, you know, I don't know which side of the political divide you all sit on or your listeners, it's really regrettable in my mind just how divided the country is. And on environmental issues, I think there's a perception that these are political issues. But what we find is that that's not true. People may have different stances on climate change. People may have different stances on a lot of political issues, but there are very few people who are pro-plastic waste. There are very few people who are pro-deforestation, right? People understand, regardless of where you stand on the political spectrum, that forever garbage is bad, right? People understand that they're being lied to with plastic recycling. And that's something that is a motivating factor across geographies, across income levels, and across political spectrums. And so, you know, at Grove, we want to have the biggest impact possible. We believe that means speaking to a broad and diverse audience. So we really, I think, have been pleased to see that we do better, for example, we've higher customer concentration in Texas than we have in California, which surprises a lot of people. But fundamentally, the Grove customer is someone who's paying attention to the impact of his or her or their household. And that's something that's not defined by where you live. There are thoughtful people in every corner of this country. And I think I've been really pleased to see that a brand that, yes, we have a deep sustainability mission, has been able to scale up and really see traction across sort of thoughtful, smart people from every walk of life. And that gives me confidence, not just in Grove's continued success, but in the ability of the industry to transform for better over the long term. So that's probably the first thing. The second thing I'll say, and this is a lesson that I relearned with Target, is that sustainable products and natural products are different. I think sustainability and natural are very similar. They're related, and companies that prioritize sustainability often also prioritize natural, but it's a different value prop. And I will say, I've been in the industry for, I guess, 9 years now. Never thought I'd say I've been in the cleaning products industry for 9 years, but I've been in the industry for 9 years now. Most consumers haven't yet realized that plant-based ingredients inside the bottle really matter. The adoption curve, however, for changing the bottle from plastic to something that's infinitely recyclable is significantly faster. And even though consumers are slow to realize what's in the bottle matters, consumers really understand the plastic waste thing because it is so tangible. And so that, I think, is a great example of the difference between the natural consumer, which is a long-term sort of slow and steady growth. Everybody's heard in you, on you, around you. I think the sustainability-oriented consumer is a wave that is kind of separate, correlated, but separate from the natural consumer. And I view that as happening much, much more quickly.
I love it. So, Stu, there's a lot of like research around those things, and different consumers are on different learning curves, and it differs by generations. But you said something earlier around, as a direct-to-consumer play, you could play the role of educating the consumer. When I first got into this sustainability retail space 20 plus years ago, the number one rule that people like Bill were telling me is it's not the retailer's job to educate the consumer. How do you respond to that attitude?
So the second word in our name is collaborative. And it's collaborative because I really believe that the problems faced by our industry cannot be solved by any one company, any one person, anyone, anything, right? We all have to work together. You know, we benefit from everything from the U.S. Postal Service and UPS to the internet providers to the green chemistry work that's been done over the last 40, 50 years to make natural products efficacious. Like, we benefit from all the work that's been done before us, and our partners benefit from Grove, and we all have to work together to change the industry. Grove today is like, I don't know, less than 10% of the size of the Tide business, right? Like, we are a tiny, tiny company trying to change a massive industry. And, you know, on a relative basis, the companies that I look up for, we all have small market share. And so when I look out at the way the industry needs to change, I am encouraged to see like-minded companies working together. We actually lead a plastic-free working group with over 70 organizations, some of them bigger, some of them smaller. And we trade notes on how to reduce the plastic in our packaging. We don't keep our like plastic-free packaging stuff trade secret. We want everybody to use it. We think we're going to keep pushing the, you know, pushing the envelope and trying new stuff. But we want to make this sort of, we want plastic to seem weird, not like we're weird. So we really try to work together. And I think that extends to the retail partners. And I give Target a lot of credit for collaborating really closely with us on how we communicate to the guest that an assortment there, and our assortment there, for those who don't know, is a really differentiated one because it's a lot of chassis refill business models, right? Like kind of like razor blade, where instead of buying the handle and the blade every time, you just buy the blade, right? And so for us, you know, you get a reusable glass spray bottle that you can reuse for 100 years, and then you buy a teeny tiny concentrate, also plastic free. And that's really different than buying a big plastic bottle filled with mostly water. But you need to educate the consumer. And so we do a lot of that education through digital content. But we were grateful that we found a partner in Target who was willing to not just sort of take the product to market, but to invest in differentiated education. And I will say, I think the results for both us and for Target of that partnership have been exceptional.
So let's play with that a little bit. I'm fascinated with the customer journey in the sustainability space. And I'll make it a little personal just to embarrass my teenage daughters. They can't imagine using bar soap to wash their hair because that's something weird dad found on the internet. But they see it at Target and all of a sudden it becomes, wait a minute, this is more mainstream than I thought. What does the customer journey and their understanding of sustainability look like from your perspective?
It's a great question. And I think, you know, it's interesting you bring up your daughters. The most frequent thing that I hear from folks sort of my generation and a little bit older who have children who are teenagers and young adults is that children are really pushing their parents to say, mom, dad, how can we be more sustainable, right? You got to stop using plastic stuff. You got to stop using single use. I think that's something that's actually really coming from the younger generations. But I think the question that's sort of embedded in the like, how do you make this not a weird thing you found on the internet, really comes into the third pillar of the stool for us, which is customer centricity. And I think customer centricity can sound, it's like a nice word that can mean nothing. But I think for us, it's really about how do we take extraordinarily sustainable products and make them extremely desirable? Right. And that has to do with brand tone. It has to do with color palette. It has to do with fragrance, right? We only use natural fragrance, but how do we make these products as experiential as the best product that uses synthetic fragrance? And, you know, that takes work, but I think sustainability has historically been associated with sacrifice, but our brand is really not about that. It's really about, I think, over delivering from a customer experience, quality, and brand perspective, and also over-delivering on sustainability.
Here's the key. Consumers, customers frequently don't understand these scientific sustainability issues the same way you and I might, and you know, our knowledge of like life cycle assessments and all those kinds of things. So what's the next thing consumers are going to understand? That's the next big trend. Plastic-free, kind of been there, done that. What's the next big thing?
So respectfully, plastic-free has not been there, done that, right? Like our category, $1 trillion a year, 0% plastic-free right now. 0%. And so the reason why we get calls from every retailer out there, the reason why, you know, my phone is... I don't know, like ringing off the hook. That's like, you know, another expression from when we used to work in offices with phones. But the reason why we are seeing so much traction is that the wave of people realizing they can do something about plastic is like, we are first pitch of the first inning. Like if we're taking the Accela from New York to Washington, we're like 10 minutes into the ride here, right? Like this is, imagine the laundry aisle in your head. All you see in your head right now is plastic. In 20 years, that cannot be true. Right? All $1 trillion in our category is going to move from plastic to not plastic. And Grove is leading that charge. And other companies have billions of dollars of embedded infrastructure in brand and plant property and equipment to make that zero, that plastic that is profitable but bad for the environment, And that's going to change in the next 20 years. And I think it's going to change because consumers are demanding a move away from plastic. It's going to change because people are going to realize that plastic recycling is a pernicious myth that's been pushed on us to build our addiction to single-use plastic and make us feel okay about consuming something that we know deep down is wasteful. But if we throw it in the recycle bin, we can like defer our conscious for just a little longer. So I actually think that zero plastic, because it cuts across every demographic, every political thing. It's like, it's not, it's universal. 80% of the US agrees we should take action on single-use plastic. 80% of the US doesn't agree the sky is blue. Like, this is a uniquely powerful issue for consumers. And I think we are just scratching the surface because Grove is the first zero plastic line in our categories that Target has ever offered, for example, right? This has never even been something that's available to consumers. And so I think you are going to see continued massive adoption of this category. And I think it's one of those things that's going to seem a little niche, seem a little niche, seem a little niche. And then in 10 years, it's going to seem so obvious because we cannot be on the path that we're on in terms of the amount of plastic that we create and plastic waste that we create without doing something. And consumers will wait a while, but we are going to take action on this. So anyway, I think that is the biggest trend that we're going to see. And I don't think that one has been there, done that. I think that's going to drive massive change over the next probably 2 or 3 decades.
If you had advice for young people, and that's, you know, whether they're teenagers or college students, what would that advice be?
So I think one of the biggest problems across our whole society is that the smartest people in society, too many of them, are after financial gain and not solving big societal problems. I think the incentives in our society, unfortunately, do not reward financially solving the biggest societal problems. So the advice that I would give to young people today is find an important societal problem and go after it. Because even though today the system isn't set up to reward that, we are getting to a moment where the most important companies and the most important brands are the ones that are solving society's biggest problems. And it's because, you know, things like climate change, the impact of industrial animal agriculture, plastic waste, these are not problems that 50 years ago were threshold issues, right? You could sort of ignore them, but in 50 years, we're not going to be able to ignore them. And so if you look at where the puck is going, to quote the famous Wayne Gretzky expression, right? If you look at where society is going, the things that really matter are going to be the things that solve our most important problems. And so I would say, find a problem about which you are wildly passionate and about which, you know, coming in, you can probably hear it in my voice, right? I love my job. I love going to work and solving this problem every day. And I like pinch myself for my good fortune to get to have my job. There are societal problems that will excite you to solve. Go solve them. And if you solve them, I believe that like value will come because the most important organizations, almost definitionally over the next 20 years, are going to be the ones that solve the biggest societal problems. So I would point your ship in that direction. And I think the wind behind you will be strong because there's a lot of work that we as a society need to do to solve the problems that we're creating around us.
You know, Stu, it's one of the things that I always talk about, and we were just literally before you joined us, we were talking about the fact that we have the fortunate opportunity to work with leaders in the industry that impacts everyone everywhere every day. And the one thing that we enjoy most about working with them is their passion to do right for their brand, but for the people that they work with, for the people that work for them and the communities that they serve and the consumers that buy their products. And it's a deep-seated, real passion. And I think that if nothing comes through, people aren't going to necessarily see you as a result of this program because it's a podcast, but what they will hear is your passion and your belief that it is possible, it is going to happen, and you're on the forefront of making that happen. So it's great advice. And I think that the change is inevitable. And that's part of what life is about. And it's certainly what retail is about. But before we let you go, Stu, we have a program part in the podcast that we really enjoy. And it's called Rapid Fire.
One of our favorite segments on Retail Gets Real is Rapid Fire. Thanks to our sponsor, PwC.
Scott, start us off.
What's the first Grove Collaborative product my mom should buy from you?
Concentrated glass cleaner.
Very good. So I know what's not in your refrigerator, but what is always in Stu's refrigerator?
I want to say produce from the farmer's market. That seems like such a hokey answer, but it's like, it is true. That and like leftover pasta, because that's all my kids eat.
All right, very good.
What superpower would you like to have?
Ability to slow down time.
I don't know that you have enough time to take a vacation, but what is your favorite vacation spot?
I like to go to Maine.
To Maine?
Yep.
In the summertime?
Any time of year. I especially like it around Thanksgiving. The world really slows down up there. It's spectacularly beautiful. And I don't know if you know this, but Maine has a higher density of forest than any state in the country. And I love being in the woods.
We used to camp on the Penobscot River. That's when I was a kid. I appreciated it, but it was pretty remote. Wow. Scott.
As a sustainability professional or a sustainability entrepreneur, what is your biggest professional pet peeve?
The absence of a bias to action.
I like that.
I'm fanboying even bigger, though. Your turn.
This will be my last one. I'll let Scott close us out. But what is the last book that you read?
Working Backwards, the Amazon book.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Very good. Scott, close.
I will say I should give a second piece of advice. I'm a voracious consumer of business literature. And I feel like the fact that people aren't reading like 20 or 30 or 50 books a year is insane. Like the smartest people in the world write down their best insights. And we don't take the time to read them like that. Yeah.
Very good. Scott closes out.
All right. Other than sustainability, what's something you really geek out on?
Gosh, I would normally say sustainability. I really enjoy riding my bike. I live in Northern California, and there's a lot of really good like cycling out here. And I find that to be a hobby that I just absolutely love. And it's also a hobby where there is no shortage of things that you can learn. And it's extraordinarily mechanical, which is really different than my whole day spent with computers. And so I actually like totally love finding new places to ride, like thinking about mechanical bikes. And yeah, I really enjoy that.
Stuart, I told you it was going to be painless. You did very, very well. If people want to learn more about Grove Collaborative, where should they go?
Go to grove.com. Strong recommendation to try the service. Download the app. It is, you will probably really like it. Most people do. And you will definitely feel good about yourself for the products you bring into your home. They are awesome.
I didn't get the chance to ask this question. Thank you, Scott. Where did the name Grove come from?
When I started the company, I knew nothing about most things. I was a 26-year-old who'd had a relatively good run as an investor. And so it was full of the hubris that can only come after having had a successful like 5-year career in finance. And I named the company in my infinite stupidity, ePantry. Ugh, I hate even saying that name now. And so the company was called ePantry for the first 4.5 years. And I realized almost instantly that that was a mistake. And I was on a camping trip in Wyoming with a bunch of my friends. And we were like driving back through this beautiful forest. And I was like, oh, we should change the name to Grove. Because a grove definitionally cannot be a single tree. And this is definitionally a problem that has to be solved by sort of many entities working together, right? One person's change does not matter. The whole community's change matters. And a grove definitionally is that community of trees. So I loved that sentiment of having a name that definitionally was not a singular thing, but a community action. And so that was where Grove came from. And Collaborative, I talked about earlier, really is the fact that we need to solve this problem together. So I was so nervous about changing the name of the company. I named our product brand Grove Collaborative and let that run for a year before I had the guts to move away from ePantry, which is just the worst name. And I cringe every time I say it. But it is proof that people can learn and improve. Anyway, so we changed the name to Grove in 2016, and I am grateful that we did.
You're grateful for that camping trip.
Exactly.
Stu Landesberg, thank you so very much for your time. This has been extraordinarily interesting. And I know that Scott would like it to go on for another hour, but I have a feeling that we'll be hearing from you again soon We are big admirers of the work that you're doing in the space that you're doing it in with the people that you're working with. And we want to help. We want to tell that story. So thank you for being with us.
Bill Scott, I'm a huge fan of the work the NRF does. I am a huge believer in the power of retail to change human lives and the environmental impact that we have for good. I'm appreciative of the time today, and I look forward to being in touch.
And Scott, thank you. Great job. You can do it again, I promise.
Thank you. Thank you. Our moms will be so proud, Stu.
Exactly. I know they will. Exactly.
And thank you all for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. You can find more information about today's discussion and more at retailgetsreal.com. And please send your feedback and episode ideas to podcast@nrf.com. During this time of pandemic, we close with just this one ask. Please be safe, stay well. And until next time, thanks for listening.